Wind Down with Jana Kramer and Michael Cawson, an iHeartRadio and People's Choice Award nominated podcast.
What up, team?
Well, hello, everybody.
We're just like silent going, what's happening?
I think the whole everybody is thinking that.
Wow. What a wow.
I think.
Hey, everybody. Don't even know what to say. I'm about to take a shot of lemon, ginger, and cayenne pepper.
You're going to say tequila. Shot of tequila to start this show.
I've never done a shot of tequila.
You want to take these together?
Yeah, cheers, man.
Cheers, babe.
Hey.
I think we're just going to let you guys be uncomfortable for a few minutes, and then we'll see how it's going.
Oh. So gross.
That was not good. Mm-mm. There's no lemon in there.
Mm-hmm. It was bad. All right. So, I mean, obviously the elephant in the room. I will be very honest. I have a lot of anxiety around it. Had an anxiety attack this morning. I think, going into last week's episode, we were not going to share what was going on. I was honestly shocked that you shared, Mike, because of how real it was, but I understand why you did, because our whole thing is that we want to like help people. But I think it was a massive lesson learned for Mike and I to not be so real time, because we weren't united and we were still, it's like, I think it's okay to share scars, but I think when you have a wound
that's still open,
I think that's, I see now on the outside of it, like that was not a good thing. I think we should have saved that for another time when we were in a better place. And I understand that it has helped a lot of people, and I get that, and I'm so glad that it has, but it also has hurt worse because of the public conversation around it and the people, and because of where I'm still at with it, it's made my anxiety worse. It's made me feel more confused, and so I think it's just kind of like put more salt in the wound. So, I mean, looking back, like, I wish we would have waited to share such, and I think that's a kind of a lesson learned for us, because, you know, there's people out there thinking Mike actually cheated, and it's like, girl,
really?
Yeah, so it's
Jesus.
So it's just, you know, or the people are like, he's never going to stop cheating on you, like, you should leave, like, and it's just like, they only see, like, the headline and not actually what happened. And then, you know, I have so many, and I love my friends for texting me. I love people that I haven't talked to in a while reach out to me. But at the same time, some of it's been, oh yeah, my husband, he relapsed again too. And I'm just like, and then I start getting in that cycle of, this is the world that I'm in, and this is, it's going to keep happening. And so then I start to just feed the wound. And, you know, to the point this morning where I was just like, I just need to take a break from looking at messages, looking at being on social, because I'm like, I just, my anxiety, and I hope, like, and Mike knows this too, I was like, I honestly just don't even know where I'm at. Like, I don't think he'll, I don't know, because it's just, it's hard, because he'll always say, well, it won't happen again. It's like, I've heard that so many times. But I think maybe now he sees how bad that wound is for me, and the trauma of finding things, whether he did something or not. I just, like, I'm to the point of like literally a nervous breakdown where I just can't physically handle it anymore. And that's not the strength that I want to portray to my daughter, to myself, to anyone else out there too. So hopefully, I mean, we've had this conversation, but it's still, you know, it's just, that was the risky part about opening that. Do you agree?
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry you're going through that.
I mean, I appreciate it. It's just hard, because I'm just like, and you know, I told Michael the other day, I was just like, I don't believe that there won't be another time, and that sucks to like have to feel that, because I've just, how do I believe that when I've heard so many times, I'll never do it again, I'll never do it again. So it kind of puts me in this really awkward situation, and it makes me look weak and to have to be like continuing to stick around, whether he did something or he didn't. And I believe that he didn't. I know it wasn't a real person. I know all those things, but it's still, it doesn't matter.
Why is it weak to stay? Couldn't it be considered strong?
I'm not saying it's weak to stay. I'm not saying it's weak to leave. I'm just saying for me personally, where I'm at and how many times I'm now, like, it's weakening me by staying.
You say you're not convinced it won't happen again. But what you mean by that is you're not saying you're not convinced he won't cheat again. You're not convinced he won't keep something from you again, right?
Yeah, and that unfortunately is the issue. It's like, he's like, I didn't, and I was like, I know you didn't. I was like, but what is just the trauma for me is not him acting out the other women. Sure, that would hurt, but the trauma that I've had in this relationship is the finding out things. That's what I just literally, I was like, I don't even care how little it is. That is just the feeling of that again is so traumatic because of the past that it's just, and from this last time, like the amount of anxiety and I'm like, I hope you see that I'm not physically able to handle another episode like that, because it's just too, it just goes back to all the trauma from the discovery, and it's just, it's overwhelming, which is, you know, obviously why I got upset last week's podcast. But I think you see that now.
Yeah.
And I think my fear is, you know, where, why I'm kind of like depressed and a little like anxious ridden is because I, you know, I've been told it won't happen again. And I just fear, I can't trust that. And I think that's where my anxiety comes in, is because when I can't trust something, I get more anxious, and I want to be able to trust. And I understand too, that people make mistakes, and people, I'm like, I'm not asking him to be perfect, but I need him to understand how deep that wound is for me when I discover something, no matter if he did something or not. That is just like, it's painful. And I just can't like physically hold that anymore. So, I mean, we've talked a little bit about it, and it's just that weird kind of like, we're not as close, because I think it's hard to lean in when I'm scared of leaning in to someone that I don't know if I can trust or not. Does that make sense?
Perfect. Yeah.
So where do we go from here? I mean, you work through this in therapy as a couple, right? And that's hopefully you'll be able to get to that place again. Because what you're saying now doesn't sound like things are great now, and it doesn't sound very hopeful. But is there hope here?
That's your question to answer.
Well, no, it shouldn't just be on me. It's the work that, you know, we both have to do. It's not... Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think... I just told him kind of just where I was at. I'm like, again, I'm not... I need to see, because it's like, you saying I'll never do it again, or I'll never put you in that position again, I can't believe. So I need to see something else to show me something different. So is it a different type of therapy? Is it a different type of communication? Is it a different type of something where then I can kind of have a little bit more safety around feeling like I can trust you, whether you delete, you know, it's just, again, and I know for people that don't understand, you're like, who cares? He deleted it. But it's like, just the trauma and the PTSD from discovering things a lot and frequently through the past couple of years is just added up to be so traumatic each time and wounding that it just doesn't feel safe. And when I don't feel safe, that's not a good environment for our kids. It's not a good environment for me. It's not a good environment for Mike. And I just want to somehow, what I'm trying to find is what will look different. What's going to look different, that it's not just him saying I won't do it again, because I can't hang my hat on that. And I am genuinely fearful that there will be a next time, and then knowing this, like, I think that scares me too, because I'm like, I don't want our relationship to end. I am hopeful and I want to be hopeful, but I'm also, I think I'm more scared than hopeful, because I don't know what I can I don't know. I don't know. But I guess I'll let you speak on that.
I mean, I didn't know we were going to dive so much into this.
Well, I don't think we really had a choice.
Well, Mike, yeah, you haven't said much, but you must be hopeful for this situation, right? You must have...
Oh, yeah. I am, for sure. I mean, I told Jan this morning, I regret that we shared last week. I do. It's done more damage than it has good, hands down.
Sharing it has.
Yes. When in the past, it's brought us together, but this hasn't. And unfortunately, it's like, I didn't even know. I mean, that's part of the benefit of me not being on social media is I don't see even a small percentage of the stuff that Jana has to see or deal with from comments or headlines or whatever. And I don't actively look it up because I just don't care. But knowing what that stuff has done to Jana, not that she hangs her head on that stuff either, but it doesn't help the situation. The fact that
it's impossible to ignore that stuff, no matter what someone says, it's impossible.
The fact that people are—I didn't even know. This is news to me that people are reaching out to Jana saying that, say whatever, that I'm probably still cheating or I'll never stop or what. I'm like, are you f***ing kidding me?
But again, those people, I don't. Like, they're like, sex addiction isn't a real thing. And then I'm like, okay, like, they don't know. You know, they don't know.
They can go f*** themselves.
Well, Michael, that's not very nice to say.
I don't care. It's not nice to say they don't think
you're right,
shit can change.
A bully shouldn't bully a bully.
I stay pretty political. And
I'm just saying, you don't bully to bully. You know what I mean? I think those people are misinformed, and I feel bad that they're misinformed. I don't hang my hat on that. What I have a hard time with is like the people that come.
If you're bringing it up, it still carries weight with you.
If we're being honest, like the stuff that carries weight for me is the wives that are like with other addicts. Those are the things that, and again, like this is what he's saying is. We share because we want to help. And I think, you know, obviously with the regret with this is we shared too soon because we weren't united, like I said. But the part that has hurt and been great at the same time is like, I love that people have reached out. I love that so much. But at the same time, reading those things and being like, yeah, my husband just, you know, same thing and he lied and I'm just, or one didn't lie. And then it's that kind of back and forth where it's just, I love to help, but at the same time, I'm still dealing with my stuff and our stuff that it's hard because it's like I'm hearing of another husband's relapse and I'm hearing of another husband's, you know, this. And it's like, especially with the addiction piece, it just makes it that much harder. So it's like I'm trying to be strong for these other women that are reaching out to me, but at the same time, I'm like, I'm still in kind of shambles. So, and it's just kind of, it feeds it a little bit as opposed to when we were stronger with coming out on things and we were able to be more solid in it. And so I think because I'm a little uncertain of our relationship or the if it'll never happen again, which again, I doubt that safety with it. So that's where it starts to feed into my insecurity and my anxiety.
Is there anything that could make you feel more secure? I'm trying to sort of think on it. And I don't know the answer. Or is it even working on you where you feel?
Yeah, I mean, secure? I'm starting an EMDR for just the trauma around discovery because I think that's such a heavy piece for me. But, you know, with Mike too, I think he's going to try other things that will help, hopefully, in situations. And him knowing, I think, now the depth of where my trauma goes with discovery. Maybe that'll be helpful with him not, we're maybe not just thinking of himself, I guess, with it too.
Mm-hmm. Right. Like I was thinking like, what if he journaled and then you were able to read that journal? You know what I mean? Where that way he doesn't have to, like, let's say he gets that text And he writes it in a journal, like, I got this text. This is so stressful for me. I delete it, whatever. And then you read that. So that way the confrontation might be easier on him. I don't know. I'm trying to think of things that would, because it, I understood Mike's position too, where he deleted it because he wanted it to be gone and he didn't want to hurt you.
Yeah, no, I get that. I do. I understand that too. It's unfortunate that both can be, you can both, we can both understand both those things. Unfortunately, there's just that, the boundary of which, you know, things shouldn't be deleted. And then the repercussions of how I've said, like, finding things is more traumatic for me than the actual act.
Well, and even if your brain understands something, your heart can still be broken by the same thing.
Yeah, for sure. Anything, Mike? Because I feel a little left out in the ocean today.
No, I just, again, I wasn't sure how much we were going to talk about this, and I think it's just right now, I mean, all I can do is be as empathetic as I can with you and understanding and do whatever I need to do to continue to create safety around things. And I'm having a hard time. And I said this the other day when Jana and I did a quick interview with Billy Bush on Extra, and I was just like, I'm tired of looking like the bad guy. And it's, you know, and I mean, I do it to myself with these situations, so I get that, but it's the fact that things are getting blown to the degree that they are. It's just like every man has his breaking point. Again, I stay very, very above board and political when it comes to my reaction to certain things and handling and not acknowledging trolls or headlines or.
Just so
press,
you know, though, if it makes you feel any better, the comments are, Jana's a weak piece of shit. She's so stupid. She's an idiot for like, they're being mean to me. I understand you not wanting to feel like a bad person, and I get that. But, like, just know that, like, it's not easy on my side either.
I'm not saying it is. I'm not saying it is.
Well, we live in a TLDR world right now.
Yeah,
didn't read. And people just glance at a headline and draw all the conclusions they need to draw. I mean, people don't even read the headline anymore. They just kind of get some key words and just make their whole opinion off of it. So it sucks.
And there was only one that said that. And it was actually a sports one.
Well, what happens is there was one, but it's...
All the other ones were...
Right, it's so loud.
All the other ones just said, topless, Jana Kramer finds a topless photo on Mike's phone. So that's just what they read.
Yeah.
And then assume. So that's like what you're saying. Like, they just read the headlines.
Well, and there's probably thousands of comments supporting you. But again, the negative ones just sound so much louder.
Yeah. And because, I tweeted someone else and I was just like, someone said something about Mike and me in it. And I said, why don't you listen to the podcast before placing, judgment and spewing hate? And then they're like, well, you just retweeted that, so now all your followers are being a bully back. And I'm just like, well, sorry.
Can't win.
But yeah. So I think it's, at the end of the day, people will, if they want to invest, and I know the people that know our hearts and our story and they want to be there, and we appreciate that. So it's spreading that we want to continue.
I'm sorry that you're feeling that you regret going public with this. I do think it is very relatable to a lot of people. I think a lot of people have hidden something from their spouse that they thought was completely meaningless, no big deal, and they end up regretting it later. And I think everybody's found something suspicious somewhere and reacted. So I think that's really relatable. I'm sorry that you regret that or having second thoughts or whatever, but I do think it's helping a lot of people because a lot of people can relate to this.
Well, and I think Mark said this, but he even related, like, when things are so great, you don't want to have to then put a stop to how great things are by bringing in bad news.
If I have bad news for my wife, I might sit on it for a day or two until I find the right moment. You know, because there's a there's
and,
a timing
and I,
to these
and I
things.
I totally get that. I totally get that. I think, again, we're not upset we shared the story. It's we're upset that we shared in that time.
Sure.
Like live.
Sure.
It was like happening.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Like we wish we would have shared it.
Like Gina said at the beginning, it's like it's better when we share about scars, not open wounds.
Mm-hmm.
And what do you think could help moving forward? You know, is it more therapy? Is it, you know, I know, Jana, you were looking at different things.
The EMDR thing looks really interesting. I was just reading about it.
And I know people that have done it that have had great success with it.
We've both done EMDR at times, and we're both going to do
a more intensive treatment
around EMDR, but both for our own traumas around things around this scenario, just because it deals with two traumas that both of us have, where mine is trusting the truth and Jana's is like the discovery and all of that. So it's, that's why this has kind of been so volatile, is because it's two colliding traumas for both of us. Mm-hmm. You know, so that's something we just got to dive into and do the work around. And
I was so, remember the other day, I was like crying empathetically. I was like, I get that. I was like, I'm sorry that like mine is the reverse of it, because I'm like, that must be so hard and like be so scary to come to me and tell me the truth. Like, I have so much empathy for you that like that is part of your trauma. I just can't ignore my trauma. That's unfortunately the reverse side of it.
Right. And that's a big reason why we've been slow to really reconnect and get on the same page, is because we've both been empathetic with each other. And we both understand, but then it's like, then we think about our trauma for a second, and that's still, it just, they just collide for both of us internally. It's hard.
It is.
It's really, really hard.
And I think what's scary is that, like, for me, when I told them, I was like, I think, again, what's scary is the, what happens the next time for me, because I just know I can't. And again, no matter what it is. And I think that's hard. Because that's my truth with it, you know?
I have one more question. Yeah. We can move on from this, and I know you're dying to. Have there been normal moments over the past week, or is this tension just always there and always palpable?
I mean, I'm not going to lie. It's just been really hard.
Yeah.
It's just been tough.
Yeah.
I got a new car, and that was a moment of happiness.
Awesome. We saw that.
I did a little retail therapy.
The little things do help.
I didn't buy a sweater. I got a new car.
it was a bigger problem.
Deservingly so.
I know. I was like, I want a new car.
I don't know. I had a therapist that said sometimes you just have to sit in it and sit in the grief and the pain, because a lot of us too want to, why don't I feel better? Why isn't this fixed? Feel better, fix. You know, when it's like you just have to sit in it.
Well, that's just it too, right? That's coming from two people who have done a lot of therapy over the years and are both people who have had crutches in the past. Mine being a full-blown addiction of running away from how you feel and stuff like that. We've both had those things. Everyone kind of has something, but the fact that we're just sitting in it, I think that's not necessarily a bad thing, kind of to your point, Amy. Like, sometimes you just got to sit in it.
Yeah, but I'm ready to like not sit anymore, because I was like, I'm about to have a nervous breakdown from like anxiety, and I don't want to feel this. Like, I guess I'm just like fearful of the next time.
Which anyone in your position would understandably think that, would have fear around that. And there's the thing, unfortunately, there's nothing someone in my position can do or say in this moment to make it instantly feel better. It's just showing you different, showing you change, being consistent.
You could like buy me flowers, maybe. Mark.
I know. Just gave a little things go a really long way. I don't know that
I'm
men
saying,
know
like,
that.
You could show me you love me a little bit more by like writing me a note, little flowers. I don't know. I'm just like, that could help me.
I forgot you're not acts of service.
No, you cleaning the house does not do anything for me.
I tried to show you today, this morning.
Thanks, but...
By taking the kids physically out of the house at 7:30 in the morning so you could sleep.
I mean, I appreciated it, but...
That's not how I receive love. That's how I receive love.
It is. That's not how I receive love.
We are going to... Not to cross-promote, which means we're going to cross-promote. We are going
to
dive...
Since we canceled last week's episode due to everything, because we are too fresh in things, we canceled our last Thursday's telly.
Yeah, our telly Imperfect Harmony series.
Because I was about to have a panic attack.
So this Thursday... The 17th, we're going to do a live head-on conversation about all of this.
And we're not like about it. We're going to answer questions. So yeah. If you guys have questions about your spouse or your couple.
It's going to be around the topic of keeping secrets, of all of that, and how to handle it. So we are going to address this. We are going to talk about things around this topic. So if you guys want to come interact with us, download the Telly app, T-E-L-L-I-E. Imperfect Harmony is our show. And... We'll have a sit down about it.
Woof. Sorry about last Thursday.
Let's take a break.
Okay.
Let's get out of our world.
Oh, and
let's
fake it till you make it.
Let's talk about somebody else's world. So, Mark, do you have any emails or anything for us?
I do. Hope this doesn't make things worse. The subject line is, he won't stop lying. This is from Jessica. No, this is totally different. This is a totally different situation. I just found out my boyfriend of 3.5 years, while we were going through a rough patch, he unblocked his ex and started texting and FaceTiming. He says he was lonely and needed someone to talk to. I found out through her messaging me and telling me everything. When I first asked him about it, he denied everything and said, just block her. You know, he was doing the gaslighting thing. Oh, she's crazy. Just block her. But then she sent me the FaceTime pictures and the screenshots and the text conversations. And that's when he admitted finally to, yeah, he was FaceTiming and texting. Well, duh. She also told me that he went over to her house on the 4th of July. We were together on the 4th of July. Things were fine. They both say nothing physical happened, but I don't believe either of them. I think there's more that they're not telling me. Do I keep pushing them for proof of the truth? I don't know how to ever trust him again because he just keeps lying about everything.
I feel like I'm going to be a total hypocrite, but leave. Total hypocrite.
But I mean, not really hypocritical.
It's really not.
I mean, kind of. He won't stop lying. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Hypocritical.
Did he call her during a rough patch, did you say?
That was the first part, is that he went to her house during a rough patch. But then she found out that he was at his place on the 4th of July and things were fine. Look, you're 3.5 years in.
You don't need proof for something what you know. That's the thing. You don't need proof for what you already know. And you know. So why do you want to continue to hurt yourself with that? Michael?
Yeah.
You know me, I do that thing that's like good, bad. If 80% of the relationship is good and 20% is bad, that's not that bad.
But this, it sounds like she's overwhelmed with trying to find proof of him cheating, which is, or being with this other woman, cheating or not.
Well,
and that's the way to live.
I'm interested why the ex would send her, so the ex-girlfriend was sending her all the messages and screenshots and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But then she said that they weren't being physical.
I thought that was weird too.
Why would the ex send all that stuff, but then that's what she's going to withhold? So that makes me want to honestly think that they aren't being physical. Regardless, the whole situation is inappropriate and wrong.
Right. He's still sneaking around with her behind his girlfriend's back.
Right. But it's like,
I don't see why she would... Why did the ex out her friend? That's weird to me, but...
Because she's jealous.
Why the ex? What do you mean?
I find it weird and that the ex called the current girlfriend. It's like, what's that about?
Right,
that's
she's
so
be
weird
to
me
them
and
up.
Something I would never do.
Yeah. She doesn't want to cheat with this guy, but she wants him single.
Yeah.
Yes. Oof. Same. Here.
Right. So it's like, why would she do
motives
that?
Motives all over the place. It's not cool.
And Jessica knows this. I edited out a few more examples of him not being honest with her just to make it a shorter email for air. I mean, it's time to go.
Yeah, yeah.
That's, I mean.
Dad Mark says, say goodbye.
That's a lot.
And daughter Jana agrees. Oh, we are all laughing.
Just faking it till we make it. I also like that we have a guest coming in that we have to just act like we're fine. We are fine.
Hey, I love it. Bo's going to be great.
I'm so excited for Bo. He seems, he's like a motivational speaker.
Yeah,
so.
He's going to motivate us to be better. He's all about plan A, mm-hmm. No plan
Bo Eason,
B.
Former football player.
We're going to have a good time with him.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. I'm excited.
It's going to be fun. It's going to be motivating. We're going to leave here feeling great, energized.
And no plan Bs.
And no plan Bs. Just you and me, baby.
Oh, yeah.
And the People's Choice Award. Because if you listened last week, you know they deserve it. They deserve it.
That is really true.
I gave tears.
That is true.
I gave heartbreak.
if that doesn't give us, you know, some
their pain for your listening pleasure seems like we deserve a People's Choice Award.
Yeah. So if you guys don't mind going on, giving us a little sympathy
votes. This is the last week to vote. Give us some good out of this.
It ends Friday. It's pca.eonline.com.
Maybe Tanya can give us some love. Wishful thinking.
Away from our own viewers.
All right, Bo is coming in.
Let's get him. All right, so in case y'all didn't know, it's the 100th year of the NFL.
Yeah, and did not know that.
You didn't know that?
No.
It's like everywhere, every Sunday.
The 100th anniversary?
Yes.
It's on the field, it's on the uniform.
Everybody cares.
Really?
It's America's game.
Who cares?
Anyways, more than 1,800 NFL players are game ready with Sleep Number beds for proven quality sleep. And I've been sleeping on the Sleep Number all through my playing days as well. So they are amazing. Guys actually do use these.
Sleep Number beds allow you to adjust on each side to your ideal firmness, comfort, and support. So I like mine a little softer. Mike likes his a little...
Even softer.
The Sleep Number 360 smart bed senses your movements and automatically adjusts to keep you sleeping comfortably through the night. With Sleep IQ technology inside the bed, it tracks how you're sleeping so you know every morning how well you've slept and gain insights for your best sleep. Come in during the fall where a queen Sleep Number 360 smart bed is now only $13.99. Sleep Number is the official sleep and wellness partner of the NFL. You'll only find Sleep Number at one of their 600 Sleep Number stores nationwide. Find one near you at sleepnumber.com/Jana.
All right, I'm super excited for our guest today. You know, we have a lot of different kind of guests on the show. Very seldom do we get an expert athlete that I can sit here and rap with. So I'll let Jana, honey, I'll let you chime in every now and then.
But wait, a wag wasn't good enough for you?
Not the kind I was looking for.
Okay.
But we'll dive into everything right now. But please introduce Mr. Bo Eason here on the show today.
Woo-hoo! You're like, woo-woo.
All right, Bo, so give our listeners a little bit of your backstory.
Elevator pitch.
I played in the NFL. So did my brother.
How many years did you play again?
Five.
Oh, same as you, Mike.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I was looking at your guys' stuff earlier today.
Which teams did you play for? Sorry,
I got drafted by the Houston Oilers
in
1984 and then played with them for 4 years.
Okay.
And then got traded to San Francisco in 89.
The Raiders?
No.
They weren't 49ers. The Raiders then. Oh, San Francisco. Who's the Raiders? Yeah. Oakland. Shoot. Okay.
Yeah. They were actually...
This is why we don't do football on the podcast.
The Raiders were actually L.A. at that time, 84.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I was also one, so give me a break here.
Yeah, that's right. You were born in 83. I just saw that.
Yeah. That's so exciting. Yeah. Okay, keep going.
And so when I got done, like we all do so soon, mm-hmm. you know, I wrote a one-man play, and it went to Broadway, and it became this hit, and it got bought as a movie, and it ran for like 15 years.
Wow.
What was the play called?
Run to the Litter. It's a one-man show. It's actually like a Cain and Abel type story between my brother and I, actually. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of semi-autobiographical about two brothers who grow up best friends. And then eventually they are pitted against one another and have mm-hmm. to destroy each other to make their dreams come true. But they happen to be best friends. So it got a lot of attention in New York, and it was great. And then while I was there in New York, business people kept coming to the show, and they knock on the like titans of industry, they knock on the stage door, which never happens, you know, in on Broadway.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, "Hey, can you bring this show to our company?" And Don and I, for years, were like, "No, what are you talking about? This is a theater piece.
Right?
We don't bring this to companies." And they go, "No, you got to bring it." And 5-6 years, we said no. And one time, one guy came in and goes, "Hey, it's the 100th year of my company. I'll fly your family." We had two little ones at that time. "I'll fly your family to Hawaii, and you'll do this play." And then he said what they paid, and we go, "Oh, maybe we do that.
Sure.
You know, we'll try that."
That sounds fun.
And so we did it, and we did it like in plain clothes instead of like the outfit that I normally wear on Broadway. So did that, and then that part just really blew up. Like, the speaking area really blew up as far as companies go and all that. So, and then that just led to the book.
Which your book is called "There Is No Plan B for Your A Game."
That's right.
And what's the best message that you give in that book? Is that about that? Like, is it a not having a plan B?
Yeah, I mean, the reason the title is what it is, having no plan B, is because my mom was like that, you know, and I just remember, I'm the youngest of six kids, right? So I have four older sisters and one older brother. And I had this dream when I was a kid, and I wrote it on this piece of paper that I wanted to be the best safety in the world, right? Not even really knowing what a safety did. I only knew they stopped people. They tackled people. That's all I knew. So I wrote that up. I followed it. But on the way to following it, you're getting rejected left and right. Like, I wasn't even recruited to go to college and play football. And so my mom's friends would come over to the house, and they would, I remember them sitting, you know, with my mom having a glass of wine, and they'd say, Bo and Tony, that's my brother's name, they have these big dreams, you know, but we don't know any pro athletes, and there's not any from our area. So maybe they should have a plan B. And my mom would take these ladies and throw them out of our house.
Aww, I love that.
I love it.
And slam the door and never to be seen again. And right then, and I was young, and I go, "Man, this is serious," right? So she knows. I didn't even know what plan B meant at that time, but I said, if my mom's so serious about this and she throws her best friends out of the house, then this must mean something.
Yeah.
Right? And that's where the title came from. It's just, we just didn't have any options. And I think, these days, a lot of us go, "Well, man, I've got a lot of options. I want my kids to have a lot of options." And I always say, "I don't know."
Well, this is a fight that Michael and I get in a lot, because I didn't go to college because I didn't want a plan B for what I wanted to do. So I was just like, when I graduate high school, I'm moving to LA, I'm going to be an actress, and I don't want a plan B, because if I have a plan B, then I'm going to end up being the accountant that I go to school to be, or, you know, get my degree in. And, you know, my dad did not love that at all. My mom was like, go live your dreams. And because everything she wanted to do. And so, you know, with our kids now, I'm like, if Jolie comes to me and says, I don't want to get a degree because I want to go do this, then I can't tell her, "You can't do that because you need a plan B." If she's going to go move to LA and be an actress or wherever she wants to go, or I can't, how could I tell her, "No, you have to get a degree," when I didn't, and I'm doing amazing.
Yeah.
You know? And she's like, "Well, what if it doesn't work out?" I'm like, "Well, that's not the mindset that you should have."
Well, it always works out. That's the thing. Yeah. If you have a plan B, then plan B is working out.
Right.
For sure. I mean, it's just how human beings are made. You know, we're going to go to the road that's easier. So if you have a plan B, which is always easier, a fallback plan.
Once plan A gets hard, they're going to start turning towards it.
Heck yeah.
And I love just seeing the title. I love so much because, you know, in the world that we came from, when in professional athletics, so many people, I feel like, just only talk about plan B. I remember when I first got signed as an undrafted free agent out of college with Jacksonville, and I signed my contract. Before I even stepped foot on the field, I had relatives and family saying, "So what are you going to do after you're done playing?" I'm like, "What do you mean?" I was like, that has no relevance right now. I was like, "This is what I'm doing. I have to put everything into this," and for the exact reason that you're saying. Otherwise, it won't happen.
That's right.
And so, but it's hard now. It's difficult having two young kids like we have, and now thinking like my parents, because my parents are always, they're very conservative. That's like, you know, when you finance a house, you do 30-year fixed mortgage. Yeah. We've had the same career for 30 years. Yeah. It's like, you know, that's what they do. And they always preach education, which I understand now as a parent, because I'm like, with our kids, I don't want them, I want them to be somewhat educated in their choice. I don't want them just to have a dream one day they wake up and say they want to do something, they take off and go do it.
Yeah.
Have some thought, have a purpose behind it. If you have the purpose behind it, that's one thing. But it's difficult because I already anticipate that struggle when the kids come of age. It's like,
I'll be saying one and he'll say because the other,
we were both able to be that, you know, part of that 1% in our respected careers who didn't have plan Bs. But now as parents, how do you, so how have you guys approached that with your kids?
Yeah. That, well, a lot of the book you'll see is the, has the kids all in it because the kids have really big dreams and they're completely unreasonable, which you, they have to be, right?
Absolutely.
Like, you know how people always go, well, you should be reasonable about your dreams. I'm like, well, they're dreams. Right. Why I gotta be reasonable about it? I mean, look, it's the same work if you're going to do a, have a mediocre life or have a, have a, be the best in the world at something. It's this, it's the same kind of work. Mm-hmm. You still got to work. Why not have the big unreasonable one? Why not have the one that you dream about? And that's where people, you know, and people are just trying to protect you or protect me or protect you from yourself. You know, they're going, yeah, I don't know about moving to LA and becoming an actress. I hear that's really hard. Yeah, that is hard. Mm-hmm. That's why I'm going.
Yeah.
You know, digging ditches is hard too, you know, but somebody's going to do that work, right? And people are always trying to talk you out of your own dreams. So the kids are huge in the book. I have a 12-year-old son. You'll love this, Michael. He's, when he was six, he drew up his 20-year plan, right? Mm. So he's seen mine. My piece of paper is 50 years old now.
Wow.
And I still have it. So he saw it at six, and he goes, okay, I'm going to draw mine up. And he drew up, he wants to be the first guy ever to play in the NBA and the NFL. So that's never happened. Yeah. So it's it's never happened. So we might as well be saying, oh, Axel, his name's Axel. Axel, you're going to be the first guy to walk on Mars, you know, because it's just never been done.
Right.
And since he's been six and now he's 12, he has been training. And I mean serious.
Stop.
He is dead serious.
And it's his decision.
Yeah.
It's, he wants to do it.
That's right. And the whole family just got behind it. And when strangers come over, they always want to soften the blow too, just like they were trying to do with you guys. They go, Axel, so wait a second, Axel. Which one do you like better? And he will, he's a smart kid. He doesn't answer. He goes, I like them both. And they're going, so, or, you know, your dad played NFL and your uncle was a quarterback in the NFL. So maybe NFL. And he's like, no, I'm doing both. And he won't budge.
So is he good though?
he's
I'm like, do you think he can really?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
No. He's a.
But what about when he's like in his 20s and let's say like 18, 19, 20, and you're like, all right, the kid's not, like, he's not cut for it.
Yeah.
Then what?
Well, then he'll get his heart broken and that'll be it. But he won't have a plan B.
But then we're you're screwed. So then what happens?
No.
Where's the B?
No, because there is no plan B. But A turns in, if you, so A doesn't work out.
Something else.
Yeah. Well, A reveals the right A.
Okay.
Right? It never.
Are you sure it's not like a soft A minus?
No. Oh, yeah. it's not the grading on the curve.
Yeah.
A minus. Yeah. It's, it, you know, and look, here's the thing. If you don't have any options, like, you know, that's why if you look at elite athletes, the ones that we admire the most, the ones that could really play, they didn't have an option. It's not like they were, you know, could do anything else. It's not like they came from a wealthy family that can just fund them all the way through. You know, that's why pro athletes come from poor backgrounds.
Yeah.
You know, because there's not an option. And you got to get your family out of what they're in. So we're just doing the same thing with Axel. Go, okay, let's do this. Let's figure it out.
It's hockey, right? Because hockey, unless it's hockey, right? Because all the gear in hockey is expensive.
I mean, yeah, you don't have the inner city kids.
We got the, she's marrying Mr. Gretzky's son over there. So,
oh, are you really?
Yeah.
So my kids go to the same school.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, so you're all
Yeah.
Oh, that's so funny.
Yeah. So the field's amazing. Named after Wayne.
Yeah. Amazing school.
Yeah. Cool school,
like,
right?
Every time we drive by, I'm like, you went to high school here?
Yeah, like, I know.
It's so cool. But yeah, no. So yeah, hockey is expensive. Hockey is very expensive.
Well, because I remember like figure skating. It's like my skates were $3,000. Yeah. Back then, like, hello. Yeah. That's so expensive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So do you think today's society, just with there's so many opportunities for these young guys coming in into any professional athletics, is that a good thing? Is it too distracting? I mean, I'm kind of torn in between because it's like you can help, one thing can help generate the other, but then where's their focus getting drawn to? Is it more of off the field stuff or on the field?
Yeah.
So do you think it's been beneficial or more kind of harmful for those guys in their playing careers?
I think it's harder today.
Yeah.
Just because of all the distractions. I mean, look, when I played, we didn't have cell phones, right?
Right.
So there was no Instagram. You weren't building a brand. You were just trying to win a game, you know, for your city.
Purely about the sport.
Yeah, it was all sports. So the level of play was really high and very dangerous and violent, right? Mm-hmm. And then, you know, as you watch this develop, like I'm even watching it with my kids, but you'll start to see, oh, this athlete isn't really concerned about winning this the NBA championship. They're more interested in building their brand or getting, you know, Facebook or Instagram, whatever they're building.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's a huge distraction. Because now, I've talked to the guys in the locker room, and they said, first thing we used to do when we came in the locker room, if you lost, everyone's like, man, you know, everybody's upset. People are crying. People are going to lose their jobs. And if we won, everyone was drinking beer and was celebrating together, right? But now,
checking their phones.
Yep, everyone goes to their phone in their separate, you know, quarters.
So bad.
So it's all separate. So it doesn't have that team building thing that we had, you know. So I'm watching my son go through this now, and I'm like going, man, listen. And there's a piece in the book. It's a chapter in the book that's all about distractions these days, which is another, you know, goes right back to the title. What you were talking about, Jana, is look, if you're not playing a big enough game, this world's going to distract you because this world's really good at it. You know, the entertainment world is good. I mean, they're good at having you watch and listen to their stuff, right? Mm-hmm. But I'm saying, look, Axel, if you're going to make this thing come true, you're going to have to be the guy. You're not a fan of other guys and other gals. You are the guy, right? So you have to take that on in your own life. So you have to play such a big game that, like, he doesn't play video games, right? But all his buddies, they play video games all day. And I'm just going, look, Axel, watch how many hours that is per day that they're distracted and you're focused on your dream. Now, those hours are going to add up after 20 years. And it won't be a fair fight in 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? That's what I want my kids to know. And like my daughter, who's 15, Eloise, she wants to be the best pastry chef, right? Mm-hmm. So same thing with her. It's just a different discipline. The principles are the same.
Where are you?
You want to be the best tight end or the best safety, or you want to be the best pastry chef. It's the same thing, like no options.
Can you put your eggs in like different baskets? So still have the same dream, but still be able to do different things.
Is it
spreading too thin?
I think it is.
Okay.
I like to go one thing at a time, and then that always reveals the next path.
So you couldn't still stay on the one and like still do it, but not have like.
I bet you could, but I think you have to learn the principles of mastery first.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You know, I love this saying. If you master one thing, so. You were a tight end?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry.
So the position of tight end or voice, singing, right? You master your own voice. You master the playing of a position so specific to you. If you master one thing, you master all things. So when I went from being the best safety to wanting to be the best stage performer, I sat down with Al Pacino because he was in 1990, he was the best stage performer of our time. And I said, dude, I want what you've got. Tell me what to do. I know how to do it at a position in football, but how do I do it here given I have no experience? And he laid out like 15 years, right? What I had to do. And basically what he said was the same thing that you and I did. Same thing that you probably did, Jenna, which was, he just basically said, you have to spend more time on a stage. your ass on a stage more than any other human being in the next 15 years. And if you do that and you play, you say the classic words, you say the classic text, you'll end up at the top because no one will be able to compete with you. Now, that was years ago. That was in 1990. So science now, they've done all kinds of studies and all kinds of science to prove that that's exactly right. That's 100% the case, regardless of discipline, regardless if it's safety or best stage performer or playwright or singer. It doesn't matter. It's all the same. This one study, you guys will love this book. And how old are your kids?
We have an almost 10-month-old baby boy.
Oh my
and
gosh.
A 3.5-year-old little girl.
Oh, great. You guys, they're so young. Good. Oh, yeah. This is perfect.
I'm moldable.
There's nothing more fun than raising little champions, you know, because.
It's the best.
But I'm scared, though, with the boy, just because I don't want him to feel like he can't be emotional or he has to be tough. So he's my biggest challenge with him, I think. So trying to not make him be too hard on him, because I sometimes feel like him following in his like. Father's footsteps are being too hard. I'm like, no, like let's be a little. I don't want to raise a softie, but at the same time, I feel like that balance is going to be a tough one to walk for both of us.
Just my sense of you guys. I don't worry about that at all. Not at all. The same with us. I mean, look, she's the one who's my wife, Dawn. She's the one who's tough, and it, and you know, there's a theory that if you go back through the Spartans, and they call them Spartan moms, they go back through all the wars that have ever been fought. And every elite performer there's ever been, it was because of the strength of the mom, not the dad. The dad is basically the cheerleader, like, go get him. And the mom can't buckle. And as soon as the mom buckles, now that country can't win a war. And this goes all the way back into the Spartan ages. Isn't this crazy? Yeah. That the Spartan moms were so tough. And so you got to go. And don't come back unless... you're on that shield, you know?
So good.
And so that's the strength of any army, any team, any athlete, any performer. It's the mom, always the mom, because they're just unbending. They don't, like I don't know if you're like this, but when my kids get hurt, like I've had a lot of surgeries, right?
Oh yeah.
But when my kids get hurt, I don't like it. Like I'm like afraid they're gonna, you know, like when they're bleeding and stuff. And Dawn's totally fine. My wife's like, totally fine. Just rub it, you know, rub it and get off, you know, put some dirt on it. You're good. Get over here. And that.
Not my little Jake. My little boy.
Our daughter's 3.5, going on 13. So right now, we're probably both like, yeah, you'll be all right.
But Jace, though, I'll be like, no, baby boy. He's my boy.
That's your little man.
He's my little dude.
And he's 10 months?
Yeah.
Almost 10 months.
That's awesome.
You know, it's interesting what you're saying, Bo, kind of about the mindset. And I'll tell you what, with all of the type A personalities that, you know, we've all, I'm sure, been around, especially in our professions, I've never met someone in my life who can master multiple things better than my wife. In all honesty. I've never seen someone where... as many hats as she does and does it with like unwavering commitment and performance on everything that she does. It's fascinating and frustrating for me to watch because I'm like you where it's like when I do something, I have to do just that.
Yeah.
Because that's how all I've done my entire life is when I'm doing one thing, I put everything I have into this thing. When that's done, I can do the next thing.
Yep.
And which is frustrating to her because we work on a lot of different projects right now. You know, we have this, we have a show online, we have a docuseries, we have another project that we're working on, all these different things that each day we might have to do a little bit of all of it. And it's, she's able to do it without even blinking.
Yeah.
And I'm like, whoa, hold on. I need a second here. I mean, you know, but it's just, it's, that is my mindset. And it's, but I think it's important. Like I said, I think Jan is just an anomaly. I think she's just... a miracle worker somehow, but I feel like that is how I personally have to be.
Yep.
Otherwise, everything I do will be mediocre.
Yep.
100%.
No, I'm exactly, our relationship, Dawn's and mine, is exactly like yours. She can do it. I remember her watching her when the kids were little, which you're probably going through this now, where she's cooking breakfast, nursing a baby, running my career, you know what I'm producing the play all at one time with a phone. And I'm like, I got to take the garbage out. And that's the one thing I can do.
And you know, did, like, you I got better than anybody else, baby. I tell you what.
So it's true. I think that's true, male, female. is
we got some Spartan wives,
right? Spartan wives.
How do you bring the A, the plan, not bring the plan B A into your marriage?
Same principles as you being the best singer in the world or you being the best tight end in the world. The exact same principles. You have to make a declaration of that's what you're going to do. You know, no mm-hmm. different than the Declaration of Independence. It's just the same.
Mm-hmm.
You declare what you want and mm-hmm. that always comes true. Here's the problem. People just don't do it. People think their marriage is just going to work out, you know?
Yeah.
It that doesn't happen. You know, those don't, it's hard.
Yeah.
You know, it's a commitment. It's no different than your career. You know, it's like, this is what we're going to build together. It sounds like that's what you guys are doing too. What we've done is really like, we're good at building stuff together. Like, mm-hmm. and simple things like our home, you know, like building our home and then our three kids and developing them and then building our play and building the movie and then building a speaking career and we build things and now the book.
Mm-hmm.
Things that
but it's because she's managing your everything mm-hmm. in
yeah.
life. Yeah. Because yeah. that's samesies.
Yeah. Same.
You guys would still be.
Yeah. Right. Doing one thing.
Taking the trash out.
Doing one thing. Yeah.
Doing that one thing.
No, but it's true though. I mean, that's to what you're saying. I mean, that's, you have to be the best, you know, the husband and the wife, and you guys are doing it together and noticing each other's strengths and weaknesses too.
And I was going to ask, how do you guys work together? Because Jan and I are two different people. We have two different mindsets. We have two different working styles depending on the project. Have you all faced challenges with working together, and kind of how do you fight through this?
We rarely argue about business stuff,
mm-hmm.
you know, and she's always been on the production side and I've always been on the stage side. But now, like, the world's calling more for her to lead, to be out front, you know? I mean, she's always the leader, but she's kind of backstage leader, you know mm-hmm. what I mean? But I think we're really good together. We don't really argue about stuff. She handles stuff that I don't want to do, and I handle stuff she doesn't want to do. So it's just like playing your position, you know? I'm, you know, like, you know you're going to lose when the offensive linemen want to play quarterback, you
right.
know? Because right. now no one's playing their position. No one's happy with their position. Same thing in marriage. When people want to play the other one's position and you start to get all out of balance, now you're all screwed up.
Okay, now let me ask you on that then. This is just from our personal experience. When you say, you know, Dawn will take care of things that you don't want to, you'll take care of things she doesn't want to. Do you guys put pressure on each other for the timeline of when those certain things are accomplished?
Yeah, I mean, we always there's always a, you know, there's always a deadline, just like you guys know,
for sure,
right? Yeah, is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, or is it like, you know, say
what he's trying to call me out on?
I'm not calling you out. I'm just saying.
I like things to be done yesterday, and so when I ask him to do something, it's like, it's shocking to me that it takes him a week when I'm like, I would have done it 2 days ago.
Does that sound familiar, sweetheart?
Yeah.
Yes, my wife is yeah. nodding. That's yeah. exactly.
So again, I think it's the male female.
100%, which is why it's going to work.
Mm-hmm.
It's why it works.
Right.
You know, if we were all the same, that does not work.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's why, you're right. It just doesn't. The reason you're attracted is the opposite. Like, mm-hmm. you know, that's just how it goes. Like, you somehow deep inside, you just love that he's like, can do one thing and do it well.
I don't know if I love that part at all. Actually, it's like one of the least things I love.
How boring would it be if like you never had to remind me of anything?
Sarah.
Yeah.
I'm just gonna be quiet. We're good right now. And I just am like, you know. No, but I mm-hmm. I love being different. I think it's good to be different, to your point.
Yeah.
That part's good.
Yeah, opposites attract. That's yeah. how it goes.
Going back real quick, so when you retired and you got into doing stage and everything,
yeah,
did you have a background in that? How did you know when you got out? Because it seemed like it was a pretty quick turnaround to you going from football into this is what I want to do.
Yeah.
How did you know so quickly? It's like, I'm doing this. Dawn, this is what we're doing. Let's go.
You know what? I was being wheeled off the field in the Orange Bowl in Miami.
Ooh.
Yeah. And it was my 7th knee surgery. And as I was on a stretcher and I was being wheeled off and I was 27, 28 years old. And I just remember going, oh my gosh, you know, what am I going to do? And I remember like having arguments like with God, you know, like as I'm being wheeled off going, what the hell, man? The one thing I do great is run, and you keep taking these legs away. Like I was having that kind of, and I thought to myself, I go, look, I've trained myself for 20 years to be the best at this one thing, but this one thing is not, does not cross over well to the civilian world, which in those days you can really hurt people as a safety. You could really take shots at guys. And so that was my job, right? So I figured, man, if I'm not going to have a career in anything. And I thought of, in the very next moment, I thought of watching plays. And I'd never been in a play, but I'd seen plays before. Not necessarily acting, just plays, you know, being performed. And I was like, man, that is so cool how people can express themselves and it's not even them. They're playing a character. And I never studied it. I didn't really know much about it. But after I had that surgery, after I went through a year of rehab, I moved to New York, and I just got in every class I could get in. I followed the same principles it took me to get to the NFL.
For sure.
Same principles. And that's when I met Al Pacino, started studying, and eventually wrote the play, and then the play took off. I just followed the same thing. It took years, it took like 15 years, you know, to write it and to have it, Dawn produced it, and she's producing the movie. So,
of course she is, because she's a badass.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So that transition was, it worked out pretty good. It just took a long time, and it came out of fear because I thought, man, how am I going to express myself the same way I did on NFL field? Cause that's legal. You know, you could hurt people and it's legal.
Right.
And I was good at that. And now I got to enter the civilian world. What am I going to do with myself?
Mm.
You know, how am I going to avoid prison?
Yeah.
And I said, and so I thought, I figured if I can express myself on a stage, it'll be the same thing. It'll be the same exact thing, you know, a little bit different discipline.
Yeah.
So did it.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's fun.
Well, Bo, where can our listeners find you?
Yeah. Well, my website's boeason.com.
Okay.
The book, There's No Plan B for Your A Game, that they can go to boeeasonbook.com.
Okay.
And that just hit Amazon too? And that just hit the national bestsellers list,
yeah,
correct?
Yeah. Hit a bunch of bestsellers. Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, it's very cool.
Can you get it on Amazon?
You can get it on Amazon.
Or do you want
them
to go to the website?
No, I mean, you can get it on Amazon or wherever you buy your books, Barnes & Noble.
Great.
Yeah, it's everywhere.
Perfect.
Yeah.
There is no plan B for your A game.
That's right. That's right. Words to live by.
Seriously. Yes, no, it worked for me, worked for you, worked for, you know.
Worked for all of us in this room. I love it.
That's right.
Thank you, Bo.
Thanks for having me.
Dawn, thanks for coming out.
That's actually really good.
Thank you.
It's the most wonderful time of the year.
Halloween.
Remember when planning your costume as a kid was like the most fun you could ever have pre-Christmas? And now that you're an adult, Halloween feels less Halloween-y, am I right? Well, MeUndies is bringing back the childlike joy of picking out the perfect costume with their spooky prints and Halloween costume onesies. That's right. Costumes. Onesies. Boo.
MeUndies are spooky soft, like designed to be the best thing you've ever put on your body soft. Like softer than a fluffy kitten dressed up in a pumpkin costume. Like softer than the brains zombies love to eat. Oh, a little too far for Halloween? Okay. Well, you get the idea. These are the softest undies known to man. They're also available in sizes extra small to 4XL, soft for all. They're amazing.
MeUndies has the most unique prints out there, but the Halloween prints are on another spooky level. This year, MeUndies is coming out with a variety of festive prints to really put the boo in your booty. Their unique prints are designed to be mixed and matched and turned into the most guaranteed first prize of the costume contest costume. So if you don't feel like giving your house, that's cool. So if you don't feel like leaving your house, that's cool too. Just wear the Halloween costume onesies to pass out candy and you're good to go.
MeUndies has a great offer for our listeners. For any first-time purchasers, you get 15% off and free shipping. This is a no-brainer, especially because they have a 100% satisfaction guarantee. To get your 15% off your first pair, free shipping, and 100% satisfaction guarantee, go to MeUndies.com/winddown. That's MeUndies.com/winddown. I'm currently wearing MeUndies right now. I have the ones with, actually the ones you got me, honey, with like the roses and vines on there and stuff like that. Yesterday I wore the one, actually like the Valentine's Day ones with like kisses and stuff. So they're amazing. The day before that, I think it was the camo. So I got them all, guys. They're amazing. It all started when my sister got me MeUndies for Christmas a few years back. I haven't worn anything since.
That was funny. Tara was like, I know this is weird, but I got you underwear for Christmas. And I was like, a little weird, but that's super cute. Thanks. And Mike, he's obsessed.
I have issues with bat wings. Can MeUndies help me with bat wings?
What?
Absolutely can help you with bat wings.
Thank you. The women don't know what we're talking about, but we know.
No, they keep you protected. They're super soft. Your boys don't stick as much. It's amazing.
Thank you.
MeUndies.com/wind down. Man, we really needed that right there.
Yeah, he was so like, he was super energetic. And I feel like I just got a little bit of an endorphin shot in my ass.
We needed that personally. We needed that as a couple. And I think it's very motivating going into the rest of our week.
Yeah, I'm excited.
No plan B.
Mm-hmm.
Well, here's to hoping.
That's a good sign. That right there is a great sign. That makes me happy hearing you guys laugh like that.
Well, that's it for Wind Down.
Bye.